Welcome to the show. The Omnium Gatherum Music Podcast is designed to be an open conversation of all things musical. Each episode, your hosts put together a playlist of randomly selected songs to discuss, for you to listen to and enjoy in your own time.
Join Matt and I as we review, reminisce, and randomly run our mouths about whatever we want. And we want to hear from you too. We'll have segments that include special guests and listener participation so the conversation never goes stale.
Follow us on social media or pop by the website to learn how to be a part of the show.
And now, let's get it on. Welcome everybody to another episode of the OGM Podcast. I am Gerald Kelly, and we have our other host with you, Matt Kanoy. And we have a special guest today as well, Johnny Goebbels, Jay Blaze, the Mad Guru.
What's up?
What up?
Welcome. Thanks for joining us. Yeah. How's everybody doing today?
Pretty good. I had some sausage, eggs, and cinnamon rolls this morning. And so that was pretty good. And then tried a couple of whiskeys. So.
This is a breakfast of champions there, sir. So, right. a bowl and a cup of coffee.
Not bad.
The only thing missing for me was orange juice. Some orange juice and I would have been golden.
Your breakfast would have been complete.
Well, if we're going over breakfast, I had a couple leftover deer bratwurst with some sauerkraut and then some bacon, some potatoes, an egg, and some toast.
You making that shit up?
Okay.
That's for real. I've had breakfast. Goddamn, son.
You got to do it to be able to get everything in.
I guess. You know? So we're going to talk about some music today, right?
Absolutely. I kind of thought today I might want to, with as far as the playlist that we threw together, and you know, we usually go about half and half as far as song picks. I might, instead of just picking only a couple of songs to talk about, I might just kind of rapidly go through my list because I sort of wanted to touch on most of them.
Okay, that's fine. Let's do that.
So, okay, yeah. The first song I picked was called Counting Backwards by Throwing Muses. So I was watching a video about the history of the band, The Replacements, and this band came up because they were signed to a major label deal around the same time. And I was like, wait a second, I've heard that name before, but for some reason, it was one that just kind of escaped my attention. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I need to hear some of that. And I dig it, man. It's kind of an early... the time frame we're talking about here would be early 80s through early 90s. They were active, so pre-grunge almost. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool stuff. And it was two stepsisters who were the main members who started the band, which I thought was interesting. Usually don't hear about too many step siblings getting along that well.
Yeah.
That depends on what website you're on. So I listened to this playlist last night while drinking a fifth of bourbon and playing Skyrim. So, I remember
awesome. That's ideal.
I think towards the end of the playlist, I think I have, more memory of what I listened to.
You got drunker, your memory got better.
Yeah.
You absorbed.
Well, more? Yeah. Yeah. Cause it was towards the tail end. So I guess it's like the songs at the beginning of the playlist got pushed out by what I listened to towards the end.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Only so much.
Yeah. Fun. So what I think I'm going to do, I got the playlist, and I know we legally can't play it, but I'm going to plug my headphones in, and I'm going to give myself a refresher course.
Okay. The first track that's on there that's mine is a Beck track that was off of Huero, I think is how you pronounce that. And I don't know why Beck, that one. It came up on my phone while I was driving one day. And it's just kind of a feel good song. I like the intro, especially the electronic loops and stuff.
Uh huh. Yeah, it's sort of the intro is a little bit unexpected as far as what it leads into, but it works really well.
Yeah, and I never know what to expect from Beck.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, he's very creative. I just like the groove of that song. It's very infectious.
Yeah.
Feel good.
So what did you just listen to, Johnny? Was that the first one?
Yeah, Counting Backwards.
Okay.
Thoughts? Yeah, definitely is from the era.
Yeah.
You can tell that guitar lick at the beginning is, God, it sounds just like something else. But it's got a weird gate on the snare. Like the snare hits and then it just like dies.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which is not typical of the era.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was an interesting production choice on that one. But it was a good song. Good track.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that, the drummer for that band is he had never played drums until he joined the band. And just kind of learned as they went.
Son of a fucking bitch. And
right.
Guess I'll just go be a rock star.
He didn't have a full drum set originally, so he did what he was able to cobble together from other people just giving him extra pieces, had no cymbals. So
wow.
Obviously on this song they had cymbals, but early on, like that was kind of what they were known for, was just the drummer who doesn't have cymbals.
I'm gonna listen
but
to, is this Sleaford? Is that how it's pronounced?
Sleaford Mods. Yeah.
Sleaford
Mods. Sleaford, I believe. Yeah, so they're kind of an interesting duo. One of the guys just brings his laptop, hits play on the beats, and just stands back and smokes while the other guy is the MC. And it's very different, like as far as
These guys are from the UK,
guy who you wouldn't necessarily expect. Yeah. Yeah, they've got their own kind of sound because he doesn't try to change his accent at all. It's a pretty thick UK accent wherever I'm assuming Sleaford is a place. Should probably look into that.
Yeah.
But I just like their style, that they're making no pretense about who they are. It's just like, hey, we put together some beats, I'm just gonna hit play, and he's
just gonna say some shit.
Yeah.
dirty and gritty.
Yeah.
Lo-fi. So
they're just fine. Yeah, lo-fi.
If you go back and listen to it, there's a lot of plosives.
Mm.
And I just actually did one. Yeah. There's a lot of plosives in it. And once again, I don't know if that was a production choice or they just recorded it and then
said like, fuck it.
Yeah, they probably did that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like their style for sure.
So when's that from? What year?
That particular track, I think, is probably around 2015.
For real?
I think so. Yeah, they're relatively new.
Damn. Hm.
Well, I got that old style.
They had a album that just came out.
Like this year?
I think it just in 2020, so very recently.
Hmm. It's another one that just slipped right by me. I've not even heard of these guys. How'd you hear about them?
I was watching an episode of What's in My Bag.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. On YouTube, it's the Amoeba Records.
Yeah.
Johnny,
are you familiar with this YouTube channel?
Mm-mm.
Amoeba Records is like a famous record store. Mm-hmm. And they
I've been to one.
Yeah, well, they have a YouTube channel where usually famous musicians or other artists will come in and they'll ask them about what they're buying. So yeah, that's the whole concept behind What's in My Bag. Like, what's in your bag? What are you buying? Talk about it. It's kind of like this show, honestly, but we're not buying music. We're just putting together playlists.
And we're not famous.
And we're not famous. Yet. Give it time.
Yeah, like we said earlier, we got all the time in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, and fame is a fickle monster, so a decent amount of fame would be okay, but I don't want like Britney Spears level of fame.
Nobody wants that shit. Conservatorship?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah, I think at our age, I think that ship has not only sailed, it
sank
to the bottom of the sea. Somebody
that ship has
dug
sank.
That shit out and put it in the
that middle. Ship. Titanic'd.
Yeah. Yeah. It's gone.
That's all right though. Cause we keep on. Gee, I don't know if you wanted to do your songs too, but my next track that I just wanted to highlight was Stigmata by Basement. The group Basement, I like a lot. Something about it, just it's not one of those styles that I normally, you know, listen to a lot of bands from this sort of punk, post-punk, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah.
It's sort of like punk meets alternative rock.
Yeah.
But
got a real indie feel to it, like a little Thursday influences in there.
I could see that. Yeah. But so I saw them at Riot Fest and they were playing, you know, they stagger the starting times for bands. So sometimes they'll overlap a little bit and they were going to be overlapping with Refused, but they started just a little bit before. And I was like, oh man, I don't know if I'm ever going to have another chance to see Refused.
Yeah.
So I got to go, but I also want to see at least the beginning of Basement set. So I went over there real quick and the first three songs they played were the three I wanted to hear the most.
Nice.
And I was just like, legends. I love these guys.
Fuck yeah. That's the worst part about festivals, man, is having to pick, like, I really want to see both of these people, but there's like 15 minutes where they're both playing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe if it's an outdoor festival, you can find an in-between place and just like listen to both of them at the same time. Although that would be maddening.
I wouldn't really know.
I'm
not a festival guy. There's too many people.
I feel you. I'm not anymore. I've definitely gotten too old for that shit.
Yep.
So random thought, as you said, standing in between two bands and hearing them both at the same time made me think of the composer Charles Ives. He was born in 1874, and he's one of the best known American modernist composers.
Yeah, I've definitely heard that name before.
He apparently did that when he was young. He would go to basically to these really big parks where they would have symphonies playing on different stages, but he would try to find a middle point to where he could hear both of them. And that was his influence on how to create symphonic, you know, compositions, was to try to make it almost like there were two different symphonies playing at once.
Wow. So, I like that idea.
That just sparked that memory in my mind when you said that.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of the episode of Parks and Rec, where Leslie Knope is on like their version of NPR.
Oh, you're talking about Jazz on Jazz?
Jazz on Jazz.
Yeah.
Studies show our listeners really love jazz.
Absolutely.
She did.
Plus, that was, what's his name? The guy who does the voice for Homer Simpson.
Why can I not think of his name right now?
Hank Castanella? Is that it?
It's that's close. That's his the right last name.
Frank. Frank Castanella.
Dan
Castanelletta. Dan Castanelletta.
No, it's close.
Castellaneta. Yeah, that's a long last name. Good lord. 12 letters. Sorry.
That's too many letters.
That's a lot.
If you're listening out there, Dan.
That's one of those names that would be abbreviated on a jersey.
Mm-hmm. Just use the smallest letters. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Oof.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
The Greek freak. He is a big one.
To be honest, I never knew. I had never had any idea how to say his last name.
Who? Giannis Antetokounmpo?
Yes. Now I know. Or Antetokounmpo?
Antetokounmpo.
Okay. And that remind me of, have you ever heard Dikembe Mutombo's full name?
I've heard it before, but go ahead and read it off. Ridiculous.
It's Dikembe Mutombo Mapalando Makamba Jean-Jacques Wamutombo.
Oh my. That is several mouthfuls.
Yeah.
That's what his wife said.
Quit with that rim shot. Look at you.
Hey. Very nice. That's fun. but has nothing to do with the next song, which is Mine Forever. But Lord Huron.
Let me review this real quick.
Lord Huron has been around for probably 6 or 7 years now. Is a kind of a new folk type of vibe to it. They did one album that was a little bit, is definitely still folk, but had a little bit more electronic influence. But then most of the other stuff they do is just pretty much straight up folk music.
Yeah. That's an interesting combination, folk and electronic.
Yeah, it was not particularly heavy on the electronic. That was they just had like minor little glimpses of it.
Yeah.
So still very heavily folk. And I like this new track a lot. This one just came out like a week or two ago.
Brand.
So
wait, this song that what Mine Forever?
Yeah.
This is
Yeah.
You know, when the track first starts, I'm like, is this what's that song? You'll be a woman soon.
Yeah. Urge Overkill's cover of that, really cool. That was in Pulp Fiction, right?
Section, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like these new songs. I was thinking about this the other day. It's like, you know, how many songs have been made in the history of music, right? It's like billions.
A lot.
Maybe not billions, yeah. But millions and millions and millions of songs, right? And
right.
I kind of feel like new music at this point is like...
looking backwards?
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. you know, you hear some new songs and you can be like, this sounds like four songs in one that I'm very familiar with.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. you know, as a songwriter, you either do it on purpose and then somebody finds you out and you get sued, or it's just like, you know, it's just so natural that you just pull from your influences and it those songs just come out of you, you know, because like, you know, when you're writing the songs, you kind of go into like a trance or a pseudo meditative state to where your mind is just kind of trying to free flow itself, you know, and once you get in that zone and stuff and, you know, sometimes you might inadvertently pull,
yeah,
you know, stuff from other songs and stuff.
That's the key though, is making it like finding that essence of the song that you're wanting to like emulate or mm-hmm. Pay homage to without it sounding exactly like that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's,
yeah,
it's a really hard line to toe without just like trying to just straight copying somebody else's shit.
Right. And that's, you know, Led Zeppelin got away with it.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
certainly did.
Who was that younger band that sounded exactly like Led Zeppelin?
Oh, my God.
Greta Van Fleet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They played Saturday Night Live, and that was pretty much a wrap on their career, I think. I haven't heard from them since they did that performance.
Yeah, me either.
Well, they're still putting stuff out. They're just I don't think quite as much buzz around them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people found out that they're not Led Zeppelin. That, you know,
yeah,
Led Zeppelin has not been resurrected.
Honestly, whenever I hear them, I think they'd probably be all right to hear live, but I'm not going to go out of my. Yeah, I'm not going to go out of my way to listen to their music a lot, but
mm-hmm.
in a live setting, they're probably pretty cool.
Yeah. And you know, I'm not going to go out of my way to like make assumptions about them, but I'm just going to assume that they got some very wealthy parents to help guide their career with, you know,
not to say that they're not talented, because they are.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta have talent to be able to get to that point, but you also got to have a lot of money.
Right.
If somebody would have told me that 20 years ago, maybe I would have gone into radiology or something. Or
started saving.
Or something like that. Or, you know, try to find some rich lady or man to try to, you know.
A benefactor?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll call them benefactors, not to, you know, sugar people.
Not sugar people.
Hey, these are my sugar people.
But Johnny, as far as what you were saying about while you're writing music and sort of pulling from your influences, made me think about, gee, you probably remember this, when we were recording for Kentucky Jelly.
Oh, my old Kentucky Jelly.
And I started playing a bass line that sounded just like the melody to One More Night
Yes.
Phil Collins. Well, he was like, boom, doom, 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 you know.
Well, it's a great song.
So,
Phil Collins.
Oh, yeah. And so then it was kind of a question of, do we leave that in?
Yeah.
Or is it too close?
Yeah. What do we have calling that track?
It was like one more Eastern promise or something like that. It was weird because it was a mash of like, and the guitar sound on top of it did not sound at all like the Phil Collins song. Right. It had more of an Eastern feel to it.
Yeah. And that's why we went with Eastern Promises. And then we just combined the two song titles, like one more promise.
That's a pretty good name.
It was like, we were just messing around. We were friends with this guy who was in the School of Music at IUS and was putting together a recording project. So it was me on the drums and Kanoi on the electric bass. And I believe John Voyle was at one point on the stand-up bass.
Oh, Lord.
And our friend Clay was an excellent guitar player. And it was his project. So, yeah, we did like three tracks.
Hmm. Are they still in
existence? Yeah,
they're on my computer for sure.
No. Oh, the tracks?
Yeah.
We should pull those up at some point. I know I played trumpet on something, but I don't know if we ended up actually putting that on a full track.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Multi-talent.
Anywho. But also, as far as like a band that wears their influences on their sleeve, this next group called Dream Troll, which is
great segue, by the way.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah,
you're born for this.
They're kind of a strange, or it's a strange name. I guess when I first heard that, I was like, Dream Troll, what? Okay. And just put it on. And I was pleasantly surprised with the 80s-ness of it all.
Yeah.
It's
very power metal.
Yeah. It's got like a
warrior
kind of
yeah, it's got some energy.
I love those.
It's got a lot of energy,
those high guitar riffs and stuff like that. Yeah, because you know, a lot of me, I can't even tell if you guys are talking, but you know, a lot of music, the low end rhythm guitars. But I just love it when a band, you know, uses those high leads, medium in the scale leads for the rhythm guitars and stuff like that. Good stuff.
Yeah.
That was a great choice. Whose choice was that?
That was Matt Kanoi.
Good job, man.
But I like it. I'm going to definitely look up more of their stuff after this. That track was really good.
Yeah, I recently posted on Haunt Fan Club. Haunt is another band who I'm kind of obsessed with right now. Mm. I posted on their Facebook page, anybody else a fan of Dream Troll? And this guy immediately posted back like, yeah, I hate him right now because I'm mixing their album.
Oh. I can imagine you would get a little tired of that.
It was like, sweet. Because he'd like
that shit over and over.
He just like put up a like 20-second clip of, you know, one of their new songs that he's working on. I'm like,
nice preview.
Man. Mm-hmm. The level of access these days, if you jump on a band's page, you know, somebody you really like, and that's one of the keys for somebody who's trying to make it like in the independent music realm is
social media
having
an online presence, interaction,
and instant too.
Totally.
Like, you know, that's the thing about social media. It's just like, it's, you know, I mean, how long did it take for you to get that little clip after you asked that question? Like,
probably like 5 minutes later.
Five minutes later.
Back in the day, you'd have to like write a letter.
Yeah.
Send it to a fucking production company or a studio somewhere and hope that it gets into the hands of the person that you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can just like talk directly to people that
are recording a band's album.
Yeah.
Right there. That's awesome. Double-edged sword, you know. You know, the social media and, you know, artists and stuff like that.
Technology in general. That is a double-edged sword, yeah.
Write a dissertation on that shit. But, you know, this shit will make it break it.
It's like a full-time job if you can somehow like, you know, make enough money doing that and be able to give up doing other work to be able to just survive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough making that leap. Yeah.
Being a musician. I read an article the other day about songwriters, you know, for these big labels and stuff, you know, working with like Beyonce and Ariana Grande and stuff like that.
Background songwriters.
Even not even just background song, but like the main songwriters, the people that like write the whole song, right? And I'm over here. I'm so ignorant. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I know a lot about the music business. I've been doing it for 20 years and stuff. Nope. But then I read shit and I'm like, you don't know anything about anything, dog. Like, what are you doing? And it's like, so it was talking about some of these big time songwriters are like having to get like second jobs and stuff like that.
Wow.
Because what they'll do is, and it's so, so shady. The record label will change like one word in a song. That and then so that cuts into the songwriter's, you know, percentage of royalties, right?
Right.
And if you go onto any of these big time artists, they'll have like 8 to 10 to 12 producers on a track, right?
So yeah,
you may be the main songwriter, but you are splitting those royalties with like 11 other people, and one of them might have just like produced the hi-hat in the track, you know, or just made a tweak here and there. And it's just so depressing when you think about the music industry sometimes and how predatory it is.
It can be, yeah.
Steal.
I was just wondering about that because I looked up the other night. I was wondering about the production of WAP. Yeah. And I think it listed 5 different songwriters. And I was like, really? 5 people? But that's probably why. So they can just split all the royalties.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yep.
Interesting.
And you know, obviously it's not, you know, totally predatory when they have to split it like that, you know, because sometimes it might be necessary to bring on additional songwriters.
Yeah. And sometimes it happens organically too. Like you'll just be working with someone and like, hey, what about this?
Mm-hmm.
You got to give credit where credit is due.
Yeah. But they also don't give credit where credit is due a lot of the time. And, you know, it's like the big, the Writers Guild strike, like what was that, like 10 years ago or something that? And it's so almost soul crushing when you think about a lot of the people in the background, the writers, and you know, basically the people that make the things happen. Because it's like, yeah, you're beautiful, Beyonce, and you're a great artist, I guess, right?
But you have to have content.
Yeah.
And those are the people that come up with the content.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And just for them to just not get the credit. But it was, I mean, like you think back about it, the writer strike, it worked.
It did.
Mm-hmm.
TV was real shitty there for a while.
Yeah, it was.
But they came back. It worked some shit out.
Yeah. So I digress.
Well, I have a theory that, or maybe not really even a theory, just my thought is that we kind of over romanticize the importance of individual musicians and don't think about the fact that there are so many other people involved in creating the music, and just the entire evolution of music in general it's a very collective thing. It's not one person really changing the course of events very often.
It's a whole team.
Exactly.
But you know, that teenage girl that, you know, loves, you know, so-and-so pop star, you know, they're not really going to dig into like, you know, the engine that makes it goes. I think at that point, it's like, you know, the masses that love pop stars or, you know, individual rock stars, they see themselves to a certain extent in those artists, you know, and they get
they want to.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. They try to, you know, it's like, I'm like, oh man, I see so much of myself in Dave Grohl. And come on, that's, you know, I tried to model my career off of Dave Grohl for a while. And, you know, I mean, you know, you get down to it. It is not, because the man is one of the greatest rock stars of all time.
Yeah. And also, it's not just him.
Mm-hmm. It's not just him. Mm-hmm. Oh, I do love me some Dave Grohl, though. I met him one time when I was 18 years old. They were doing an autograph signing and an acoustic show at Ear Ecstasy. And, you know, me, you know, 18 years old. It was 1999, right?
Ooh. Showing your age.
Yeah. Could have been 2000. I don't know. You know, those years.
It all bleeds together.
Yeah. But they did their acoustic show. It was awesome. And this is the original Ear Ecstasy location. Mm. You know, the
Ear Ecstasy was a record store in Louisville, by the way. It's no longer a thing, but it was excellent.
It was our Amoeba Music. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I go through the autograph line and, you know, I see Dave Grohl and there's Pat Smear and the other guys in the band. And I'm just like, I don't even care about those guys. And I see Dave Grohl and I give him a high five and I said, I'm going to be a rock star just like you. And he goes, get you all the girls. I was like, ah, I'm so giddy. That was awesome.
That's what he said to you, is it'll get you all the girls?
That's what he said to me.
Dave, if you're listening, we love you.
Yeah, you're the best, man. You're the
best. It was probably his canned response at the time.
Yeah. I like them shoes, Dave. Yeah, look at all the girls.
All the girls. I'll take off. If Dave got cans, I'll take them.
Give me a can, Dave.
Give me a can, Dave.
That's awesome. We love you, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. So the next band is probably one Dave Grohl would like, because I know dude is super into, well, he was definitely into hardcore punk back when that was relatively new in the 80s. And this band is kind of a new take on hardcore punk. I feel like Idols is the name of the group. They're mm-hmm. another British group here. And I just really like the fact that they speak their minds and they don't care.
Very blunt. Yeah.
If you agree. Yeah.
What was the first thing he says is, I'm a feminist.
He's a weak.
Yeah. He screams it.
He's a weak.
Yeah. Now I have heard a criticism of their songwriting is that it's usually very repetitive. Like they'll have a verse, then a chorus, and then they'll probably repeat the same verse again
mm-hmm.
in a lot of songs. But I think it kind of fits with their motif, if you will, because they're just trying to drive home that point. They're not doing anything beyond kind of like, this is the immediate blunt point that we're making right now.
Almost mantra-esque at that point.
Uh-huh.
What was the song we covered? The punk song. 24 hours sedated.
Oh yeah, I want to be sedated.
Yeah, it's the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool.
Yeah. You change a few words and
Absolutely.
And that could be the key sometimes. Even if you just change like one word between the verse, like that can have a profound effect mm-hmm. on what you're saying.
And it's so easy to write like that. Jeez.
Yeah.
spending time, all this time writing a second verse like an idiot.
Like a fucking idiot. Like a fucking
dumbass.
Just one and done.
But sometimes second verse can be like the hardest part to write in a song. Cause it's like, you know, if you write a really good first verse, lyrics are tight, the vocal line is tight. You're like, this is tight. And then you go to write that second verse and you're like, you almost feel like you have to top that first verse with the second verse. But like at that point, you are trying to write something better.
Right.
When that first verse just comes naturally.
And that reminds me of another similar situation, and that a band's second album, like the curse of the second album.
Oh yeah. The sophomore curse.
Yeah. Cause you're trying to you're trying to beat that first album or like to mm-hmm. make it better than that first album. And then like, there's a fine line between trying too hard and just trying.
And you've made the money and you're not as hungry anymore. And I think that is a huge factor in a lot of how the second album can just kind of be weak. And not, you know, it's just like you when that first album, and a lot of bands like Limp Bizkit's first album that, you know, with the album is so raw and nasty.
Yeah.
And they never did that. I mean, like they sounded
like that again.
And I don't know if it's because they didn't want to sound like that or they just tried to like grow their sound or whatever. But like, you know, they were, I feel like Limp Bizkit never even came close to that before. I mean, after that first album, but it's just like, is that hunger and that drive that helps songwriting, you know,
the struggle.
Mm-hmm. Cause you feel it and it's real. But then once you get that money, it's, keep rolling, rolling, rolling. What?
You know, at that point, you're doing it all for the nookie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh.
Despicable.
Oh, God.
Anyway, that was a big digression. Sorry, Matt. We were talking about Idol.
That's cool, man. I was thinking about a band recently that has kind of quietly put together a very strong discography in my view. And they were fortunate not to, I think, have their first album blow up too huge. And the band I'm referring to is Chevelle. The first album sounds a lot different from everything else they've put out, but it did have some success, enough to get, I actually did hear their first single on MTV back in the day when, you know, 120 minutes. Remember that show?
Oh, yeah. Matt Pinhead?
Or yeah, they'd show some.
The bald dude?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe so. Something like that. No, wait, not.
Matt.
Penfield, right?
Or something. Yeah. Damn it. I knew. I'm sorry, Matt.
Pinhead. Sorry.
I was thinking of a Hellraiser for a second there.
Yep.
They look pretty similar. Just one.
What's a male?
One doesn't head? Have the pins, and yeah.
But you're definitely right about Chevelle, 100%.
Was yeah, that so first album? That second first album. Single? What was that first single? Was that "Send the Pain Below" or "The Red"?
No. The first off of the first album was called Mia.
Oh, M-I-A. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And it did not get like a lot of radio play,
right?
But there was a video, and I liked the song a lot. It sounded like sort of a Tool clone, and I was okay with that because I fucking love Tool. I'm right. wearing a Tool t-shirt as we speak. Uh-huh. you know,
represent.
Tool is one of my ultimate bands all time, so I didn't mind the fact that they were, you know, somewhat pseudo ripping off Tool, if you will.
Pseudo Christian Tool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah.
I never really got that impression from them, but I don't know.
Well, you know, okay. I played with them twice.
Oh, you played with Chevelle twice?
Yes, I did.
Back you in the day. Son of a bitch.
It's awesome. Both shows were just
yeah, I've seen them.
Sold out Jillian.
Well, it was back in the day I saw them, you know, couple of times locally, and yeah, man, it was fun to see them early on, and then what they've progressed into. But I feel like, kind of stayed pretty true to their, you know, the tone that they set on the second album. I'd say the most recent album, which actually just came out maybe a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. is one of the more progressive things they've done. But it's still
a couple of the singles that came out.
Chevelle still putting out music.
Yeah.
Yep. Just like, yeah, yeah. Last week, 2 weeks ago.
Huh.
They've been slowly dropping singles before they dropped the album.
Pretty cool.
I think they even had a couple music videos.
Hmm. Nice.
I like Chevelle, man. Like, it's always been kind of one of the skeletons in my closet that I've not really been proud to admit that I like, because a lot of people make fun of them or whatever, but I really do. And they kind of remind me of Helmet in a way, you know, like the hard rockers with short hair. You know, they don't really like present themselves as like the traditional like rock and roll stars or anything like that.
Thrice.
But they have a bit of a heavier edge.
Yeah.
And they're also very melodic.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that they can write hooks sometimes and then also write songs that are just heavy without a lot of hooks. Yep. You know. It's not always the same style of song over and over. And then occasionally they'll throw in one that's a little bit more like a ballad.
Yeah.
Got to throw in the ballad.
You got to slow it down.
Yeah.
Okay. What's next?
Well, so this one is kind of a twofer in my mind because it's off of one of my favorite soundtracks, which is Tales from the Hood. Yeah. Something, man, there's something about gangsta rap
and married
with horror.
Yep.
That I just feel like works so well. It's and, such and a visceral the addition of thing.
Comedy too, I think is excellent.
Yeah, a little bit of comedy angle to it. John Carpenter. Yeah, because it's not taking itself too seriously.
Tales from the Hood?
Yeah, it was Tales from the Hood. Is that a John Carpenter movie?
No. Oh, the original. I know. So Spike Lee was a producer, and Marshall Rusty Cundiff and Darren Scott. 40 Acres and a Mule film works.
40 Acres and a Mule.
And Spike Lee also co-produced this soundtrack. So
he was all good shit.
I feel like they did a good job of just putting together some, you know, a solid track list of, you've got some heavy bangers, it like Spice One's Born to Die. Oh my God, man. Yeah. That song is brutal. It's so good though.
The golden age of movie soundtracks.
Yep.
It was the director and producer's personal mixtape for you.
Yeah, we should include that as a segment next episode. Best soundtracks, because there's so many good soundtracks, and I feel like that's not a thing anymore.
Nope.
It's been a long time since I've seen a movie come out with like a really good soundtrack that's been released.
Man, they ain't trying to pay no musicians royalties forever. Yeah, I'm gonna have to put that shit on TNT or TBS.
Right, but shit's different now with streaming, right? I mean, they're not like relying on sales of the albums and stuff.
Who, the musicians or the
production companies?
Yeah, I don't know. I think just being able to have a physical CD.
What the hell is that?
Made a difference for some reason.
You mean cash deposit?
No, you know, the things that people used to listen to music on.
Compact discs.
Yeah, it was like those things look like
little silver records.
Yeah, yeah. Future Frisbees.
Mm-hmm. Man, yeah, there are a lot of good soundtracks. We could totally do a deep dive on that, which I want to do.
Yeah.
But
what is this track?
This one,
Tales from the Hood.
The other kind of the other aspect of it that always. The reason this one always comes back to me is we were talking about favorite bars.
Yeah.
And in this song, I'm Talking to Myself by Enemy and Grinch, the mean one. There's a one short line in particular that always comes back to me where he says, "Can't stop thinking, fuck cops."
Yeah. And I heard that too. It stood out to me.
I'm like, man, that is so perfect. It just, yeah.
We should explain a little bit too about the bars thing, because you and I were talking about what to talk about on this episode, and one of the subjects what we settled on was favorite bars, and I'm over here thinking like drinking establishments, like what bars are around here that we really love. I did not expect you to throw out favorite rap lyrics as bars. Like hot bars. We were not on the same page. I've got a few of those in my pocket for today, but I also added some songs that remind me of our favorite drinking establishments around here.
I think that's just kind of an indictment towards that's you, awesome. Tony, that Gerald views you as just the whitest.
Just so white. Just white. No. I've known Matt Canoy for a long time. He is not 100% white.
Oh, yeah.
He used to say back in college, he's black from the waist down.
I'm going to take that as a compliment, but...
Right, you canceled before you even get off the ground.
That was years ago. We were in college.
Those are like the template apologies that motherfuckers give when they came about to get canceled. It was years ago. I had a different sense of humor back then. We were in college in the 80s. Like, what was the 80s even mean? We just high on cocaine all the time. Just
said what you said. What you said.
Yep. I said what I said.
I have no recollection of that.
Yep. I didn't even know what this means. So there was a basketball player, Myers Leonard, who was on, it was during the All-Star break, and you know, he was at home and he played Call of Duty online, and he was like a famous Call of Duty streamer because he was an NBA basketball player. And he's sitting there and he got sniped by somebody, and he sits there and he's like, blah, 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 talking all this shit. And then he's trying to figure out the word to call this guy. And he breaks out the K word that is derogatory towards Jewish people, right?
Oh,
not good,
you know. And he was just like, I didn't know what that meant. I just
wanted to hurt somebody's feelings.
Yeah, it's just what people say on Call of Duty. And I'm like, okay, there's so much wrong with everything that you just said, bro.
Oh my god. Yeah,
yeah, he ain't in the NBA anymore. He got traded to another team, and then they were just like, okay, we're dropping you.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
You, sir, are not a role model.
Nope. You earn that.
Man.
You earn that position.
Yeah. Anyway, we digress yet again.
Sorry.
We'll get away from cancel culture because that shit's depressing and kind of frustrating, but also valid.
Yeah. So, it is what it is.
Yeah. Everything is what it is.
Which, ooh, is what it is what it isn't. That made me think of Jay Blaze.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a good segue. Let's talk about your project that you just released under Jay Blaze the Mad Guru. What's the album called?
It's called It's Whatever, Man.
It's Whatever, Man. And where'd you come up with that? I'm just kidding. That's very obvious how you came up with it.
Actually, no. So what it was, so at the beginning of last summer, because I was buying a bunch of single credits off of CD Baby. You know, CD Baby is you release music and it sends it all to streaming services. So I was, you know, about four tracks deep writing, and I wanted to buy a full album credit because they were on sale at the beginning of the pandemic. And it was like half off. So I bought the full album credit, not even knowing if I was going to finish this album. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you need to name this. And I was just like, that's whatever, man.
I see. So it was on the spot. You had to come up with a name to be able to buy the full album credit.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So then as time moved on and I wrote the rest of the album. And then I took the picture for the cover, you know.
Which is just you standing on your back porch.
In my underwear.
In your underwear.
In a robe, drinking coffee. The dog out there.
Putting off strong pandemic vibes.
Yeah. And it just, I mean, it kind of just framed everything kind of, you know, well with the rest of the album, the name.
So by the way, I was just listening to that earlier and Sarah saw the, you know, album photo and she's like, oh, that's great.
Oh, that's great.
That is a great. She's like, is he just standing on his back porch with his just in his underwear and a robe? And she's like, awesome. Yep.
Well, that kind of set the tone for the album then, huh?
Uh-huh.
Coming up with the name on the spot like that. I think some that happens a lot. Some of the greatest titles and greatest names just come out of necessity.
Yeah. And well, so it, I don't know. This is the kind of the weirdest one that I've written up to this point, because it's like every other one, you know, I wrote to be an album, you know, 1865. We wrote it to be an album.
Yeah.
But this one was kind of just like, you know, we were all just kind of existing.
Yeah. Just making it through.
Yeah. And, you know, I was writing songs that how I felt that week, you know, because it was like I was working both jobs and I didn't get a chance. You know, I was writing part time, you know. So Thursday nights, you know, because I wouldn't have to go into the office on Friday. So Thursday nights would generally be my drinking night. Mm-hmm. And I'd drink and I'd sit on the porch and I'd, you know, listen to some beats that I would make. And I would sit there and drunkenly write the, you know, songs. I'd get like one verse in and a hook in. And then the next day I'd wake up half hungover and I'd be like, what the fuck did I do last night? So I would, you know, sit down with my notepad and I'd play it and I'd try to remember what I did. And, you know, some of the times I'd be like, this is terrible. And then other times I'd be like, this is really good. And that's kind of how the album kind of went. Yep. And then, yeah, it was just how did I feel that week? And that's what I put down, you know, and it's depressing. The whole album's it's a pretty depressing album. There's not really,
I don't know that it's depressing. You can tell that you were a little depressed when you were writing it, but I don't feel depressed when I listen to it.
Oh,
you know, and I think that's one of the cool things about music is that you can listen to something that, you know, someone was going through a lot of pain through while they wrote it, and then it brings you joy.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. It's actually a catharsis because it helps you work through those same feelings and kind of get beyond it.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons I like metal so much. Cause I mean, I'm not a violent person, but sometimes you have those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you have that
side of you. And just listening to that can Like you said, it's a catharsis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's better than, you know, becoming depressed yourself or going out and being violent yourself.
Right. Just getting that out there.
Yeah.
That's why songwriting, art in general, it's to me when, you know, I mean, it happened when I was a kid too. It's just like when they started taking art out of the schools and it's just like not giving kids access to like artistic endeavors to be able to get, you know, their feelings out. Cause you know, kids got feelings and they don't even know what they are at that point, you know? And by taking that avenue away from them is just awful.
It's crippling, I think. Yeah. It's emotionally crippling. And we end up with not so great type of people.
Right. Yeah.
Well, the art saves lives for
who
sure.
Who can't process their fucking emotions and then go out and just, you know, shoot a bunch of people or beat their wives or whatever. And I don't want to pinpoint on the fact that they, you know, they just didn't get art when they were kids, you know, or whatever.
There's lots of elements combined that,
but it doesn't help that they aren't given that opportunity. And, you know, it helps them, you know, process their feelings, figure out who they are when they're growing up and stuff like that. And it's just, it's sad, man. You know, what they do with kids in this country, man, it's just, you know, try to indoctrinate them into just being good worker bees and taking their creative away, their creativity and individuality. Yeah.
If creativity is squashed and people are just pushed into some sort of box, then, you know, they're those impulses where they don't have a positive outlet is going to come out in some way and usually not a positive way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So. And also, you know, you don't get to, you can't really see the beauty in the world. There's a lot of beauty in the world, you know, and it's just, if you don't, if you don't come from like a little artistic background and, you know, being able to find the beauty in your own bad art, you know, you're not going to be able to see the beauty in bad situations or in normal situations. You know, all you're going to see is the negativity and the darkness and all the hate and stuff like that. When, you know, the world sucks, and, you know, climate change and all that stuff or whatever. But like, there's still beauty in the world out there. You got to be open to find it. And if you just close yourself off to it, and if you are closed off to it from a young age, then, you know, how are you going to find that when you grow up?
Yeah.
Mushrooms.
Mushrooms, I guess.
You know what I mean?
That kind of made me think it on a philosophical level about what Kierkegaard said about people's anxiety when it comes to their failings. How they approach that makes a huge difference. If you can accept your own failings, it opens you up to be able to love others and love yourself. If you constantly struggle with your own failings and don't let yourself just, you know, be human.
Yeah.
You hold yourself to too high of a standard internally, then it's going to turn ugly.
Just like Mama Ru says, if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love somebody else?
So true. Amen.
Yeah. but, you know, With the album, you know, I just want to say a couple more things about it, you know, because I haven't, you know, you sit inside of you by yourself, and, you know, and I, you know, Maggie, my wife, is, you know, she's an empath and she doesn't really like angry music.
Yeah.
So I couldn't really like play her the album a lot because it's just, you know, it's not her cup of tea, and it's generally,
you didn't want her to worry about you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure she worries about me enough as it is. But it's cool to finally be able to, you know, talk about it, you know, a little bit. And
yeah,
I really like the album. I like I feel like it's probably my favorite, my most well-produced one, self-produced, made all the beats and recorded it myself, mixed it, mastered it, and all that stuff.
100% you.
All me.
It's very impressive.
Thanks.
I really liked it too. I think this is my favorite of yours as well.
Thanks. So adult, not adult, but it's more grown than the rest of them. It's like
more mature.
Yeah, that's the word. Yeah. Mature. I think my favorite tracks, there's another track about getting fucked up. I like that one a lot. Then there's
what's it called?
Another track about getting fucked up.
Yeah.
Oh, is that
that's
sorry.
The name. It's called another track about getting fucked up. And then the last one on the album. Because I, you know, just like when we were in the Whiskey Riders, I always like to have our shows and our albums to have like these peaks and valleys and stuff like that. You know, start off strong, you know, mellow out a little bit, and then, you know, punch you in the face at the end. That's why Storm in the Holler was always the last track on the albums.
You know?
And I think my favorite song on this album is the last one, Hallelujah, the Sky Has Fallen, because it's like, it's got some trap elements to it, some hip, you know, obviously some hip hop, and then the, you know, really hard rock chorus with the really fast vocals and stuff like that. And some,
it's very different. I like it.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. And then there's one more called Crucifixed, which has some of my favorite lines in the whole album.
Some of your favorite bars?
Some of my favorite bars in the whole album. Yeah.
There we go. Nice.
Because, I mean, that one is all about, I mean, like, you know, last year it was just like such peak hypocrisy within the Republican Party. You know, it was just like, you know, the Trump fuck your feelings flag that, you know, you see every once in a while. It's just like, it's. So that song's, you know, basically taking my frustrations out on, you know, fake ass white Christian culture. And I know plenty of Christians out there. I'm not, you know, if you think I'm talking about you as, you know, just because you're a Christian, you're not a fake ass hypocrite, you know, but like, it's those people that are out there that just like, you know, say this and that. And like, you know, the Joel Osteens of the world and stuff like preach and then, you know,
hypocrites in general.
Yeah. When it comes time to have to house people because a huge hurricane's coming, you know, God helped you get this big ass fucking house, Joel Osteen, and you're not going to open your doors for these people that need it.
Right.
Get the fuck out of here with that shit. So that
one's
it's a heavy shit. But yeah, that one's probably my favorite message is Crucifixed. So if y'all are listening out there, check out the J Blaze the Mad Guru. It's whatever, man. It's on all the streaming services and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And hope you guys enjoy it.
Tell me a little bit about. So the track that I picked off the album was Won't Have Time to Breathe In. And I mostly really liked the beat to this one. Mm-hmm. A lot of like auxiliary percussion type things, snaps and dings. And
yeah, and it's got that.
Yeah. Yeah, so not a whole lot of traditional drums or anything, but the beat is really cool. Tell me a little bit about that song. Where the inspiration for that come from?
Okay, so this one actually, because I had done a few singles earlier in the pandemic, you know, with some friends and also with one of my favorite U of L basketball players of all time, Russ Dickula Smith. And so with Russ Smith, I came up with three tracks where I did a verse and a chorus and I sent them to him and I said, hey, pick one, you know, and they were all chilled out because, you know, he's, you know, kind of a chilled out guy a little bit until he gets on the basketball court. And some of his tracks are, you know, hard hitting and stuff. But that's one of them. And I tried, you know, it was one of those where it was just like, I just want to be lyrical. I want to write, you know, whatever just comes. I want a word salad on this one.
I liked the word salad on this one. I think one of my favorite lines was, it's one about dopamine. I need to hit a dopamine.
Yeah. My knees, they need glucosamine.
Yeah. Don't get too close to me.
Yeah. Don't try to close to me. Tell me who you supposed to be. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, that lyric or that verse had kind of a mumble rap feel. And I mean that in the best way.
Oh yeah.
I'm not a big fan of mumble rap.
That's what I was going for though. Yeah. Okay. And then what's the next? It's like, I hit a roadblock on my way to try to fall asleep. I fell into the things that always keep on haunting me.
Yeah.
Keep it together. It's just the weather. Heroes are made when life brings the pressure. I'm tripping on the future because everything will fade away. No Avengers are around to come and save the day. Damn, Mr. Wyatt. Let's start a riot. Closing my eyes. It feels like I'm flying.
Yeah. I like that a lot, man.
Thanks. I appreciate it. That's a good track.
Yeah.
I love writing. I just love it.
Yeah. Well, you've written a lot of good shit. We should also mention that the three of us have been in a band together and that band has a couple songs on the list this time. We were in the Whiskey Riders together and have experienced quite a bit
musically
together and have gone through an incredible journey.
Yeah. Coney, you came through. You were like the clutchest dude for us.
Super clutch.
So clutch. You was just like, we needed you so bad. And you was like, I'm there, bro. I'm there, bros. I got you.
Even though you lived like 2 hours away, made it work.
Yeah.
It was like, hey.
Man,
in practice, and I mean, this man, Matt Canoy, like learned. How long was our set? 2 hours, 2.5 hours at that point.
Yeah,
almost three. Yeah,
because it was a bunch of covers and a bunch of Whiskey Rider stuff. Because you know that's how you would make money if you ain't famous. Is you do cover song, you know, sets and whatever. And the man did it. He came in and learned it in a few weeks, and
And we played some pretty awesome shows during that time.
Mm-hmm. Had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Sugarland.
Sugarland Shine Company out in
yes,
Gatlinburg, Tennessee.
Yeah. It was my pleasure, man. It was so much fun. We did have really fun shows. What was the place we played over in Virginia? That was a
Wolf Hills Brewery.
The Wolf Hills Brewery?
I think that's what it was called. Wolf Hills.
Yeah.
So remember that? I was so mad because we pulled up and there was a huge Confederate flag.
Oh, we yeah. pulled up, yeah.
Yeah, I remember just lost your reaction. Shit. Was it just like no?
Yeah.
No.
Because it was like a punctuation on kind of a really fucking shitty weekend, because it was like,
oh, that trip was,
we were going else. To, we thought we were playing at a cool bar in Asheville. Turns out we were playing in like
a nowhere bar outside of Asheville.
Yeah. On the tiniest little stage in front of like 8 people, and they was all playing pool.
Well, I think 5 of those people were working the taco truck outside. Mm-hmm. Just came in. Yeah.
We found out on the way down there that a booking agent was quitting the label.
Yeah, while we were on the road.
While we were on the road going down there.
Yeah.
Remember that? And then then the next day, Brian Fife, God bless his heart, he hooked us up with an in-store at that music store.
Oh my god.
It was so weird, son. Like, I don't even remember where that shit was. It was like,
it was on the border of like Virginia and North Carolina.
Yeah.
Oh, but my god. It was like this little old man who taught lessons out of a music shop.
Mm-hmm.
And what were we supposed to be doing there? Like
we did a live stream. That motherfucker's still on Facebook. You can still find that live stream on Facebook.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
We didn't know what we were
actually. Luckily, it didn't sound too bad. Honestly, it sounded okay, but it was just such a weird experience.
So weird. Yep.
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
What are we doing here?
Yeah.
And then, like, towards the end of our time, like, this kid and his mom came in for like violin lessons or something.
Yeah.
They were like, I guess we'll just wait outside.
It's like, yeah, you will wait outside. We got to finish the song.
We got rock star shit to do in here.
Yeah.
In this little music shop.
But after that Confederate flag and my damn near nervous breakdown, we got some really good barbecue, right? Remember that really awesome barbecue restaurant?
Did we? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we got some really good barbecue.
Yeah.
Started to feel better. Then we went back to the brewery and the show turned out to be really good.
Yeah, it was a good show.
So you can't judge a book by its Confederate flag all the time. That's all I'm trying to do. Totally right.
Luckily, in this case, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that was legit a really fun show at that Wolf Hills Brewery. That I might have walked away from music forever if it turned out to be just like the worst. But like, there was like 100 people there.
Yeah, and they really dug us.
They really dug us. They was dancing and stuff like that. And yeah, so I'll take it. That was a good wrap up to that weekend.
Yeah, that was a long trip though.
Yeah, it was.
It was a long drive.
Long ass drive.
It was. It's always a comment when the staff really love what you're doing, especially if it's a bar, because then they'll just give you free drinks. Yeah.
Speaking of, remember when we played in Nashville and it was supposed to be an Americana Fest, right?
Oh my God.
And we show up and there's nobody there at the bar.
Well, somebody else was playing that night.
There was two other bands and they convinced us that it was a late arriving crowd.
Right. No, but I mean, there was somebody else playing. There was a huge, like the Sword was playing in town that night at another venue down the street. And there was also Americana Fest.
Mm-hmm.
So like venues and shows all over the place.
But you would expect apparently it was a historic venue. Jimi Hendrix played there back in the day and, shit like that.
I feel like they exaggerated that shit a little bit there. Historic.
It's the oldest bar, right? In
something like that. Yeah.
Nashville.
And then the other bands convinced us to play last because they wanted to get the fuck out of there, and I did not blame them, but
they fucking duped us.
Yeah, fuck y'all for doing that shit to
us. Tricked us good.
Yeah, because you knew we had to drive back home that night, you assholes.
Nobody was coming.
Yeah, just let us play and go. So it was our turn to play. We played like half our set or whatever, and I remember it was that old man that was at the bar. And he was just, he looked like he was bopping his head along and shit like that. Turns out this motherfucker was asleep the whole time.
He was nodding off.
Yeah. He was nodding off. He was junked out, nodding off. And when we were done, The bartender, we had to beg and plead just to get some free PBRs.
Which was part of the deal.
We were supposed to get a case of PBRs and didn't. Yeah.
That's how we were getting paid for that gig.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't even a paid gig. It was just free beer.
Yeah.
And then he ended up charging us like 75 cents a can.
Oh, man, it was so frustrating. Nashville was not kind of Husky Riders at that point.
It was not. That was our Nashville experience. It was not great.
Oh, yeah.
What were those sandwiches that they made at the bar, though?
Oh, my God.
Wasn't it grilled cheese or something?
Something grilled cheese, and we got a bunch of like fried foods and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was like, because it was greasy. We had a chance to like leave and go to an actual restaurant. And I can't remember who, was it Wes? Because I think Wes was there with
us. Wes was with us, yeah.
And it was just like, I guess maybe it was a group decision to stay there and eat.
He was just like, there's a place to eat next door.
Yeah. And it was just poor decisions all around by everybody
That's true.
That night. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you know what? We learned a lesson from that.
I thought it was hilarious that we rented a giant van to go down to that show.
Yeah.
It was like the nicest vehicle we'd ever traveled in.
Mm-hmm.
To play the shittiest show.
Yeah, it was the shittiest show we ever played. Yeah.
That one guy nodding out was hilarious, man, because we really thought he was like grooving and like getting down to the music, but he was just trying not to fall off a stool.
Yeah, because I pointed it out. I was like, this guy's getting down with us. And he just, nope. Just was asleep, nodding off, junked out, drunk, or whatever.
The other bands that played earlier didn't even stay.
Yep. So any of you bands out there that think you struggled,
You have.
And I don't want to diminish your struggle. No.
It's always a struggle. It's always going to be a struggle.
Yeah. So just, you know, when you look back on things, you got to kind of just laugh about it, because being mad about how you weren't successful, it's not going to change the past. And it's not going to make it. And it just kind of jades you on everything in the past and stuff. It's some stuff I've been working through. So, you know, you live and you learn. Can you just keep going, keep moving, keep grinding. Find another avenue, like, you know, you guys are doing this podcast now. It's awesome, you know?
Yeah, I needed something creative musically in my life, now that we're not really playing anymore. I think that the live music scene's about to change, or has changed, mm-hmm. and will be forever changed by this global pandemic. I mean, we might get back to a sense of normalcy with that, but I hope that people have a newfound appreciation for live music and musicians that do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in that sense, maybe it's good that it won't go back.
Maybe.
You know, maybe it'll be, you know, the local music scene will be a lot better for it.
Yeah, maybe.
I won't be there for it. Fuck that shit. It's too much work. Too much work. My knees. Then we're back.
Ooh.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Duff in the Butthole on 98.3 124 in the afternoon.
WQ fuck you.
So the way you guys got this playlist set up, is it like, Coney, is yours in the first half and then it switches to G halfway through?
It's sort of random.
Because it seems like in order so far, all of them have been your choices, right?
No, so it went me, G, me, G, me, 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 G, me, G. It's just random.
Do you have a question regarding that or something? Like,
no.
Which ones? Because I'll tell you which ones I picked.
Okay. See where we left off on. I'm talking to myself. So we're at.
Yeah, because we were talking about favorite bars.
Uh huh.
And then we digressed into other bars.
Yeah. I miss going to bars.
I haven't been to a bar in over a year.
Yeah. Mandy's had her birthday at bars twice
in
the past year. And I just can't bring myself to go yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone's comfort level is different. I'm not comfortable going out to a bar just yet.
You know,
only half vaccinated so far.
Yeah. You're half breed.
So speaking of going to bars and favorite bars, I put Kiss from a Rose on the list to honor the Irish Exit. I'm sure both of you remember the Irish Exit, but that was like one of the biggest dumpster fire of bars, man, in the area, but it was so fun. We had
the best of times and the worst of times. Jesus.
Exactly. The best of times and the worst of times, sometimes in the same night.
I never got into a fight there. That was good.
Yeah, not me either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I knew all of security, though. So
yeah. There was really the one time I almost got into a fight. Like, I guess I bumped into the wrong guy and he said some shit and then I said some shit. But then we started talking and then we resolved our issues. But then one of his boys stepped in.
Oh, yeah.
And his boys started talking shit. And then I think security escorted all of us out, all three of us.
Yeah, just because you were there. You were like, man, we squashed this.
Yeah.
This guy is the one acting a fool.
Yeah, we're done. Like, we're cool now. Like, we dapped up and everything. Like, nah, you still got to go. They let me back in.
Right.
Yeah,
because we knew him.
Because you know, we were the cool guys there. The Irish exit. What does that say about us, though, if we were the cool guys at the Irish exit?
Ooh, I don't know. That's not exactly a badge of honor.
It's a badge.
It was a different time. It was different time and place.
So that place would get really wild, and it had a theme song. And when it was time to close, you knew when it was time to close because Seal's Kiss from a Rose came on and just about everyone in that bar stopped what they were doing and sang the song. People got up on the bar.
It's beautiful.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. We debuted music videos there.
We did. We played a lot of shows there.
Yeah.
Even after it wasn't the Irish Exit anymore, it became
Gospel Bird
and a couple other restaurants. We played there a couple different times during Harvest Homecoming, which is like the local fall festival.
Coney, you played a couple of those shows.
Those are fun shows.
Yeah, you played the one where it was you, and then you came back and you played with us when we added Brutal, Alyssa, and Chase, and we played Pony with two bass players.
Yep, double bass.
Yep. Wild,
well, not double bass, but you know, two basses.
That was so much fun.
Yeah.
I think they run out of liquor that night?
They did.
Not we, as in like the five or six of us, but no, our crowd. We definitely had something to do with it. Our fans were drinkers for sure.
Bars loved booking us because we were the whiskey riders and they knew that the people that we were going to bring out were, you know, alcoholics. I mean, that's the best customers.
Let's not dress it up.
Bar's best customers, alcoholics. So yeah, we brought them. Look at that. Yeah.
Rest in peace, you beautiful shithole.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, I feel like doing a complete 180 right now, talking about Wind of Change.
Yeah,
which is
Scorpions, not Winds.
Yeah, this is
which if you type in Winds on Spotify,
I was looking
for this song. I'm like, where the fuck is it? Oh, it's just Wind of
Change.
My bad.
This song to me is one of the most important songs of the late 80s/early 90s.
Yeah,
and it is one that sometimes gets a lot of hate. I don't really get it. I mean, people, I think, feel like it was too commercial, like they were just trying to write a ballad that.
But it's the Scorpions. They were like arena rock.
Yeah, they started in the late 60s, and some of their early stuff is pretty rocking, man.
When did this song come out, though?
Late 80s?
So they started, I think they wrote it in 89, because in the late 80s, they played in the Soviet Union. This was when the Soviet Union was just starting to open up to Western bands. Mm-hmm. So like Motley Crue, Skid Row, a couple other bands were able to go in and play at this Moscow Freedom Festival. And they're like, it was such a big deal politically. You know, this is one of the most important events of the 80s. From a cultural perspective and politically.
Yeah.
So they wrote this song really to try to capture the feeling of, he talks about following the Moskva River and to Gorky Park. And
which those are some of the lyrics that have been the most hard to understand throughout my life because I didn't know what those things were. I didn't understand the,
yeah.
the cultural references or the geographical references of that. But that makes sense.
If you think about, if you put it in historical context, it's actually a very deep song. It's all about looking forward to a brighter future where people are open to each other.
Yeah, I get that feeling from it too. Also, it's got an excellent whistling part.
Which, you know, yeah, it's beautiful.
Kind of hard to pull off.
But what year did it come out though? Because if they wrote it in 89.
I think they wrote it in 89, but it came out a little bit later. Let's see.
Because I know at some point in the early 90s, it was just like, if you were a hair metal band, it was, you know, your time was up.
Yeah.
It was released in 1990. So, and that coincided with the fall of the Berlin Wall. Mm-hmm. Or wait, no, it was recorded in 90. So they started writing it in 89, recorded in 90, and then it was released in January of 91. So yeah, by that time, the Berlin Wall had already fallen.
And it was and a new year.
This was like the anthem for, it was the top of the charts across all of Europe and hit like number 4 in the US, I think. So, you know, it's rare that a song is that huge across
the globe,
you know, most of the popular music listening population, you know.
Same year that Smells Like Teen Spirit came out.
That's interesting. Such a difference there.
Wind of Change
and then the actual change.
And the change and everything, yeah.
Well, and that isn't 92 what we were talking about the year, or was it 91? 91 or 2 was the largest musical revolution as far as popular music in the U.S., probably since the start of early rock and roll, like the shift from jazz to rock and roll.
Yeah.
Because the 60s revolution and the 80s revolution were minor in comparison to the early 90s. And that was mostly to do with hip hop.
Yeah. We talked about that a little bit last episode, some of the evolution of music and the study that was done and how they found that there were like 3 different time periods where there was a huge change, like a revolutionary shift. One was around, like you said, the transition of from like jazz to rock and roll, like in the 50s and 60s.
Well, it's so the study I looked at, it started at 1960. So it didn't really look at the rock and roll, or not early rock. Right. It was talking about like 64 when you had the British invasion.
Yeah.
And then 83. Yeah. 83 was
talking about the United States.
New wave. Yeah, so they looked at the Billboard Top 100 specifically. So you're talking about the most popular music in the US. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's a pretty good snapshot of kind of in general where music was headed around those times.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it doesn't take into account a lot of subgenres and everything.
Right.
I'd like to see the difference in like today, how many rock bands are in the top 100 compared to like 30 years ago.
Compared to the 80s?
Probably not anywhere close.
Insignificantly.
Yeah,
different. Well, not insignificant.
What's interesting to me and kind of makes me feel a little bit, you know, like I'm getting kind of old and not exactly finger on the pulse, even though I try to pay attention to what's new, is the fact that Drake has outsold so many other artists for so long now. His numbers are just like astronomical. Yeah. And part of that is to do with the fact that it's a much more global population of music buyers now,
right,
than ever before. But for somebody who's like, I think I only know one of his songs, to be honest. And
wait, wasn't this?
And I didn't even think it was that good.
He's just really good at marketing himself. I mean, he's good. I don't want, you know, Drake is good. He's a good.
Are we talking about the guy from Degrassi?
Yeah.
Drake?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Degrassi Drake.
Oh,
mm-hmm. Yeah, basketball fan Drake.
His sales numbers are just enormous.
Yeah.
And compared to anything that came before, just squashing it.
You know, and it would be a real shame if people that were listening would Google, you know, videos of Drake being inappropriate to teenage girls at his live shows. That's something.
Mm, yeah. That would be very unfortunate. Drake.
Yep.
Well,
wind of change. It does.
How did we get from there to here?
Wind of change doesn't really roll off the tongue very well, though. Winds of change rolls off the tongue.
Right. It's a lot easier to say.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of that probably has to do with the fact that they're a German band.
Yeah.
You know, so could be English, not their first language, even though they certainly spoke it fluently.
Right.
You know, you hear a lot of foreign artists these days, like that come up like over the last 15 years. They'll be like, yeah, I watched Friends and that's how I learned
English. I learned English from watching TV.
Yeah. I wonder what TV show bands in like the Scorpions, like, you know, in the 60s, 70s and 80s, like foreign bands.
MASH
or Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
So, they were probably a decade behind or so.
Oh, that's true.
Popular culture from the U.S. So like in the 60s is when they were getting Elvis. Yeah.
And Dick Van Dyke. I Dream.
Yeah. That kind of stuff. So it was like,
I think.
I don't know. I wasn't around.
You were around in Teen Spirit.
Actually, one of the other musical revolutions happened the year of my birth. And I like to think that I contributed to that immensely. Born.
Yeah.
As a consumer.
But no, it was just, that was just another one of those years, like in the 60s, and then it was 83, and then 91 or 92.
Hmm. Hmm. For those that are curious, I Dream of Jeannie came out in 1965. Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah.
So did we skip the Converge song?
We did.
We did.
We don't always talk about all of them, but we can talk about that one if you want.
Song is nasty.
It is. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite Converge songs and music videos.
Mm, nice.
And it took me, one of those bands where you have to look up the lyrics because you're never going to understand what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And the hook for that song is cashed in, crashed and burned. Cashed in, crashed and burned.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. I can hear that.
And the music video is very, it's this guy going to a corporate suit, like tie and briefcase kind of job. And he's just so like beaten down by it and tired of it and just like crushed by the monotony of it all. And there's not really like a storyline to the music video or anything, but it's like, it just portrays that feeling of like, wanting to break free from that.
Mm. Kind of like that movie with Michael Douglas, Falling Down.
Falling Down. Yeah, that movie was
great. Oh, man. That is a gritty movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's only 11:02. I want my breakfast.
There's very few movies that capture how hot it is outside. And I feel like that really captured like how fucking hot it was that day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great point. He looks just sweaty and miserable. Just
sitting in traffic. And
just trying.
He just leaves his car.
Birthday.
And we can't get away. We can't finish the podcast without talking about Storm in the Holler, my favorite Whiskey Rider song.
Is that your favorite?
Storm in the Holler is my favorite Whiskey Rider song.
That was definitely up there with most fun to play.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was definitely fun to play. My favorite to play. Because it just got wild.
Yeah.
You know?
And for me, it was like the quintessential, had all of the elements of like old Whiskey Riders, new Whiskey Riders, you know, cool lyrics, good background vocals, guitar solo, you know.
And some banjo.
Banjo hook.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we wrote that song about camping.
Yep. Mm-hmm. In the Red River Gorge.
Red River Gorge. Sometimes the rain just comes on you so quick. And that happened that day.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Storm coming down in the hollow now. Mm-hmm. And I like how you put in the Southern Cuts version. as opposed to 1865 version.
Yeah.
No, mm-hmm. that's my fault.
Oh no, that's fine.
No. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I can't.
We're not super happy with the sound of 1865.
Oh, you're being very nice.
I am being very nice because you know, never know who's going to listen to this in the future. But personally, I know I speak for Johnny as well. That album didn't sound the way that we wanted it to, and we spent a lot of time and money and effort recording it at an actual recording studio for the very first time, because everything mm-hmm. else we did was all just in, you know, basements and bedrooms and with our own stuff. All on our own. And this time we were on a small record label and they paid for us to have some recording studio time, and it just did not turn out the way we thought it would.
Nope. Sure didn't. Nope. And I'm pretty sure that's the reason why Matt Stottman quit. Aww. Was because of how it turned out. Because
of the recording process.
He was incredibly disappointed those first few times we tried to listen to it all the way through.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't blame him.
I don't blame him either. There's still good songs.
He wanted to fight Nick. Remember that?
I don't remember that.
But yeah, he was trying to key in some like distortion for a guitar part for John Cox. Mm-hmm. And Nick came down, the producer, and he started turning the knobs and stuff. And I had to step outside with Stottie and calm him down. Cause he was like, he didn't fucking know who I am. Like, who the fuck is he? Like, I know exactly what I'm doing with this amp, you know? Yeah. And he does. Like, Stottie is like probably the most talented musician I've ever met and played with in my life.
Yeah, he's incredible.
And he knows exactly what he's doing. And oh my God, he was so pissed. He was not happy about any of that process. And it was just like, if you noticed, his interest level went from like a 10 to like a 1 after that. So I'm pretty sure the recording is what made him just like, it was the end of Stottie being in the Whiskey Riders.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's unfortunate because he was really good and he added a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that album had a lot of potential.
But just like I said earlier, can't dwell on the past because it ain't going to change shit.
Right.
Gotta get our hands on the mask.
Yeah.
I had kind of a similar experience recording with the Grinning Man when the first guy who was, you know, recording engineer, he just wasn't there. He
checked out.
Yeah. And that sucks. He eventually did actually disappear and moved away to Florida. And so luckily, I mean, the studio brought in a guy after that who was excellent, but we probably should have started over and just re-recorded everything.
Yeah.
Because just what we had wasn't cutting it, but we'd already used up so much of our time. And yeah.
I bet you guys could have negotiated though to get that time back though, if motherfuckers straight up bounced in the middle of your recording session. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, looking back, I mean, you know, hindsight is 20/20. We probably should have, but we thought it was going to be salvageable, and it just didn't turn out right. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes the idea of starting over is just so daunting.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
When you've put so much work into where you've gotten to, and then you're just like, oh, fuck.
Oh, fuck, why have you done this?
I got to do this all over again.
And I, unfortunately, don't know enough about the whole recording process and everything to be able to tell sitting right there, is this going to be good enough or not? Cause in the studio, I thought, well, this sounds pretty good.
It always sounds when we would great in the studio.
Yeah. Cause you know,
always.
Yeah.
High end monitors and like, it's just such a pure sound quality when you're in such a pure listening environment, you know, there's no other noise distractions. Everything's so like, hi-fi in the studio
right off the board.
Sounds great.
You know, it's like eating pizza fresh out the oven. You know, you gotta let it cool down a little bit, but like, oh man, it's just delicious right there.
And that's why the mastering process is so important, because you know, nobody's gonna be listening to this music in a recording studio setting.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make sure that it sounds the same and good enough across all different platforms, all different types of speakers and systems.
So true.
Why do I love playing music? God damn it. It's just such a hassle on the whole
thing. It is, but it's process. The feeling. I've asked myself that question before, and you always remember when you're playing music.
Oh, yeah.
There's a feeling you get that's like nothing else.
Yep.
There's nothing else like it.
Mm-hmm. Nothing, ever. Yeah, you're right.
That's why we do it.
Mm-hmm. That's why we do it, because it feels good. I never had a blowjob feel this good before. Rocking a good hour and a half set.
Mm. 3 hour set.
It's like I'm busting a nut out of all of my friends all at the same time.
You know, change your nickname from Jay Blaze to Nut Fingers.
Old busty nutty fingers.
Old jizz fingers.
Jizz hands.
Oh, God.
We're children. I'm sorry.
So, atmosphere.
Yeah, let's talk about that. This has one of my favorite bars in it, lyrical bars. And I remember hearing this song first in college at Ball State, and Matt Quirk was across the hall singing this, and I was like, what the fuck is that? Because it's so, like, it just catches your ear. The main hook is, from a head full of pressure as the senses that I clutch, made a date with divinity, but she wouldn't let me fuck, and I got touched by a hazy shade of God, helped me change, caught a rush on the floor from the life in my veins. And it's, I think it's something about just like the rhythm of it, how it kind of like flows off the tongue. And it's also like, it's very esoteric, you know, talking about God's bathroom floor, having a moment, either a psychedelic on drugs or
shooting up, right? The life.
He eventually talks about all different kinds of drugs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just that feeling of like becoming sober after, you know, I think that's what, God's bathroom floor is in reference to when you wake up sober and you're on the bathroom floor.
Yeah. Or the stairs outside of the apartment. That's happened before. That was fun. Somebody stole my sunglasses off my head. Either that or lost them.
One of those likely, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you lost them, it's like somebody stole them from you.
Now, I remember them having them glasses. When I passed out, because I lost my key, I had to pass out on the stairs outside of the apartment. This is a long time ago. It was like 2005. Yep. I wasn't up to no good back then.
You wasn't up to no good? So you were up to some good?
I wasn't not up to no good.
I wasn't not up to no
good. Yeah.
I saw a great thing recently where it's talking about how time works in my mind. It's like 2005 was 10 years ago. 2010 was 10 years ago.
It's all the other day, okay?
Yeah, 2015 is a couple of years ago.
Yep.
It's like 2021. It's still January.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wait, it's April.
I'm still writing 2020 on things when I'm writing the date out. Still writing 2020.
It's a traumatic response, I think.
Yeah, I guess so.
2020 will be with us for a long time.
I mean, I feel like it was no escape for anybody that last year. Jesus Christ.
It does feel, what is it? It's April now. So it kind of feels like, what, December 60th, 2020?
Yeah. And it's like, so who was
90th?
My boss the other day.
90th.
She was like, last year seemed like it would never end. And this year seems like it won't slow down.
Yeah.
So it's great. Let's do the time warp again.
We're not.
Time does feel elastic sometimes. Like it's not moving at the same rate.
Yeah. Depends on what's
weird.
Time is relative. I think maybe it just depends on where we're at in our orbit around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to face this way and burp. Sorry. Let me mute my. I'm going to mute our microphones real quick.
Nah, man, just let it fly.
Wrong button.
God damn it. Whoops. You didn't even burp after all that.
It was a little one. It turned out to be not as major as I thought it would be. So you got this Nine Inch Nails song that I'd never heard before. I never really got too deep into Trent Reznor's catalog.
Yeah.
I love him as an artist, musician, songwriter, producer.
That wasn't my favorite album, but I really liked that track. It's kind of listly, like background, like ethereal kind of sound.
And I feel like all the drum samples kind of like cut out every time another drum sample comes in. It's like it feels like they don't overlay on top of each other. Mm. And I thought that was a pretty cool choice.
Yeah. He does a lot of little stuff like that that you notice but don't recognize.
Mm-hmm. He's such the fucking goth hipster. Because, like, if you fucking, like, listen to any interviews about how he produces or makes his music and stuff like that, he's like, he's got the most obscure shit. And the way he talks about it, it's like, it's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to make fun of him. I mean, a little bit, but like,
that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, some people take their craft so serious, you know?
Yeah.
And he is one of them, but for good reason, because, you know, he's one of the biggest from that genre of all time.
Yeah. I love that he was such a big gamer.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think he's a technophile, is what I've heard. Anyway, and one of his biggest influences back in the day was Aphex Twin, who is an electronic artist that uses all different kinds of samples and sounds and like instruments that he makes that are not supposed to be instruments or whatever. And
yeah.
Just so creative with using the technology. And I think that was like heavily influential on Trent Reznor.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you can see that in his work.
Yep.
Technology is a huge part of his songwriting and his sound in general.
And, you know, being able to do what he does with all the unique tools that he uses, it's like he creates these soundscapes that you hear and you're like, that's Trent Reznor.
Yeah.
That can't be anybody else.
Yeah.
You know,
like watching the Social Network. Didn't he do the soundtrack for that?
I never seen that movie.
Oh. Yeah, with Atticus Ross. And I'm so glad the two of them have kind of created this partnership where they're just doing amazing soundtracks now.
Mm-hmm.
It's such good stuff. And it really, every single one of them has heightened the movie that it's been in.
Yeah.
It's that perfect, you know, like what a soundtrack is really supposed to do, where like Steven Spielberg goes to John Williams and is like, hey, can you make my movie even better? And he's like, oh yeah, here's the Indiana Jones score or something. You're like, fuck, that's amazing.
Yep. Yeah.
And Trent Reznor would work closely with a guy named Atticus, wouldn't he?
I guess.
Atticus,
are you implying
is such
that it's a goth name?
I mean, yeah. Yeah. Like LeBron, you hear
he's a producer, right?
You hear the word LeBron, name LeBron, you know he's a basketball player.
Nice.
You know?
And I'm racist.
I mean, I can
racist
say that
against goths.
Goth is a race.
Yeah. Black Lives Matter, right?
When I hear Atticus, it just makes
hell yeah.
Because they're goth and they wear black.
There you go.
Damn it, Johnny.
I'm sorry, I'm going to get y'all canceled before you even get
off the bed. This wasn't going anywhere anyway.
We're going to self-cancel.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have canceled ourselves.
That's got to be a South Park episode coming up.
Probably.
Everybody just canceled themselves ahead of time.
The pandemic special and the vaccination special were pretty funny.
They can't stop. I admire those two.
So, yeah, they're going to go until somebody forces them to quit. That's their goal.
Yeah.
Is that they take it too far and somebody won't let them anymore.
Well, they definitely can't stop until The Simpsons ends. That was their goal, right? They want to go one more season than The Simpsons.
I guess. I don't know.
Simpsons.
I thought, because they were a couple seasons back, they were ending each episode with hashtag cancel South Park. Hey, please just let us be done with it.
Release us from this hell.
Release.
But it is still really good.
Shit out of me. I thought you look back like somebody like Amber was standing like over us.
Oh no. That's just my drum kit.
So the song Tear Ducks.
Tear Ducks.
I couldn't find that on Amazon. I had to do a different song, but how do you pronounce this? The OCs, OCs?
Well, yeah, they were the OCs and now they're just going by OCs. I'm not sure if there was like some kind of legal shit with the name or if they just decided to go in a different direction, but they're listed both of them are listed there.
I was wondering about that because the OCs I had seen a bunch and listened to quite a bit of their stuff, but it does look like maybe they just changed their name.
Yeah, it's the same band.
Yeah.
They've got two drummers, which I love.
Oh, it says they've changed their names several times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they've been known as Orinoka Crash Suite, OCS, or Orange County Sound, the OCs, the OCs,
yeah.
The with two E's, and then now just OCs.
Those first two names you listed off, it was like, I remember them old random band generators back in the day, band generators.
Right.
That might have been it.
But I guess Bandom, maybe that would be a good band name, Bandom Generators.
Bandom Generators. Thank you. We are Aphelius Crossing.
These guys are really weird, though. Like I said, they have two drummers, which is what drew me to them in the first place. I think I caught like a video on YouTube. It was probably a live video because they do a lot of those. And I just couldn't put my finger on what they sounded like. It was something that was totally new to me and intriguing, because obviously the two drummers thing, and then their vocalist is very raw, I guess. Mm-hmm. A lot of reverb on his voice, and he also plays the keys at the same time. This song in particular is really long. And some of their tracks are really long, like up to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like an 8-minute track.
They do kind of stretch out sometimes. And I think that has to do with the fact that it's kind of a garage rock type of thing where they focus more on the live performance.
Yeah.
So they might just get a jam going. And so somewhat similar to how a jam band will put together an album. They just kind of see what works live and then decide from there, what can we sort of pare down to use in an album setting?
Yeah.
30-minute songs, huh?
Yeah. I mean, the Mars Volta did it.
And worked in Blazing Saddles.
Yeah. Mars Volta had a little more like orchestration.
Right.
Or like through composed feel to their songs, where the OCs is a bit more like I said, kind of jam
loosey-goosey-ish
in a way.
Jam band.
Yeah, where you can feel like, or you can tell they're sort of feeling out the song when they play live. Like it's not completely rehearsed or
set in stone, like how many bars you do this or how many bars you do that or whatever.
Yeah.
Kind of an organic feel.
Mm-hmm.
So we've already talked about Kiss from a Rose, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about the Irish exit.
I mean, what can we say about Kiss from a Rose that had an argument set?
That nobody understands classic. The lyrics. And
Seal doesn't understand.
I know. He's not about to start explaining them now.
Well, no, he's gone on record saying that they don't make sense and they're not supposed to make sense. Right?
Yeah. He tweeted that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was like, Seal, come on. What the fuck does Kiss from a Rose on the Gray mean? What's on the gray? What is the gray? And he was like, I don't know. I've gone this long without explaining it. I'm not about to start now.
The middle ground. You know, one thing that I'm trying to assume from the songs that you picked, because I can't really discern which ones are your songs. And which
you're talking to me or Matt?
You.
Me. Okay.
Gerald Kelly.
Yeah.
G.
You can't.
You love the bass, man. Like a lot of your songs is like kind of bass heavy.
Really?
Yeah.
I do
there
love
was,
bass.
There was one. Which one was it? It's got a like a really old school like bass line to it. I was listening to not that one
on this playlist.
Uh-huh. I think it's, is it this low tide? Oh no, it's this ISIS? Other, it's this other VOC song, Snickersnee.
Is that on the list?
No,
because that's not on the playlist
because I couldn't find this song. Tear Ducts,
right.
So I had to pick a different song
because you're looking on Amazon,
yeah, right? Okay. Yeah. And it's got that bass line.
Tear Ducts, the OC's song, also has a bass line that repeats quite a bit throughout the song. It's just kind of a driving, sort of a walking bass line, but not noodling around very much. It's mainly just kind of arpeggiating.
It's true to its own line, but use it in different root notes and stuff.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So
what's your fancy music talk? I'm just a drummer, man. I like bass and drums. I like the rhythm section.
Root note is like the most basic of basics.
I know what root note is. Goddamn. Well,
spell it. Spell root note. Spell it.
First of all, it's two words.
And second of all,
R O O T N O T E H. There's a silent H in there, right?
Yeah, you're right. Because it's it comes from the Baclavian theory.
Baclavian scale.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's for the non-existent H chord. It's an imaginary chord.
The H chord is my favorite chord.
It's just sharp.
If you take the inverse of the chord,
that's all the H chord is. G sharp, bro.
Oh, right. What was I thinking?
Mm-hmm. What's this? We got Close Enough, right?
Close Enough was a Whiskey Riders track.
And that one, remember Alyssa said that she went to a strip club, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they played the song Close Enough.
Yeah.
And apparently the dancers really like dancing to that song because it's got a really good driving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking.
Yeah.
I mean, make them ass cheek clap to that.
I would love to see that. I don't know if I believe her.
She had video. She had video of it. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I stand correct.
All right, then.
Yeah.
It's a good stripping song. It was fun to play, too.
I did like playing that one. Yeah. And then you got that Lenny Kravitz song. Who picked that one?
I picked that one. That had been stuck in my head for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And I think it was because of the track before that. The track before that is by Los Yesterdays. And they are a newer band, but they sound very old school.
Okay. All right. So that's a new band.
Yeah, that's a new band. It's one of those things that you're talking about earlier. Like a lot of new music is looking backwards and like tending to like retroize or retrofit itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of them. Los Yesterdays, you can tell by the name.
Mm-hmm.
But I really dig it. And it made me think of that, you know, that style of music or that, that genre of music.
It's not really necessarily R&B so much as it is like
not quite Motown.
Yeah. It's got a pop feel to it. Pop sensibilities. It's kind of upbeat and stuff.
Yeah. I kind of dig it. And that's what made me think of the It Ain't Over Till It's Over song, because it has that kind of feel to it to me anyway, like the old school kind of feel. And I had the lyrics stuck in my head for about a week, and I was like, who the fuck is that? It's got to be an older song. And I finally like gave in and looked it up, because I was trying not to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
I gave in and I looked it up, and I was like, there's no way that's Lenny Kravitz. Fuck enough is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Written.
He wrote that song.
Yes.
Oh, he wrote it?
He wrote that song. It's not. Yeah. At first I thought it was a cover.
Uh-huh.
And then I looked into it. Nope. That's his original.
Yeah, he wrote it when he was going through a breakup.
Yeah.
So
you can tell.
If you want to write a good song, just go through a breakup, man. No.
Just dump somebody in your life.
Lenny Kravitz, the most handsome rock star of all time.
Like, ooh, he's got to be up there.
Like, for real. Like, name me like two or three rock stars that are better looking than Lenny Kravitz.
Off the top of my head, that's going to be tough.
Right, because there are none really. All, I mean, the three. What is it? The three things that women always say, or even
tall, dark, and handsome.
Tall, dark, and handsome. Motherfuckers got all three of them.
Yeah.
So I don't think that he's more handsome, but Jim Morrison, I feel like needs to be on the list somewhere, just like based on his magnetism.
Yeah, he's a good looking dude too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For what he lacked in actual good looks, he made up for in charisma, for sure.
Oh, for sure. Mm. Yeah. But I don't know. Yeah, that's a tough one. Kravitz is
Axl Rose. Old Axl Rose.
Okay, I was like, yeah. Axl. Wait, Rose.
Yeah, Axl Rose is up there, man. That man is
young Axl Rose.
I feel like that's still more of a case of charisma.
Maybe.
Yeah.
A bad boy attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck. I will bust my neighbor's head with a wine bottle.
Yeah, I feel like he was all talk, though.
He, I don't know. He did get arrested.
How hard is that, though, to beat your neighbor with a wine bottle? All you need is a neighbor and a wine bottle. Anybody can do that.
You're right. You know? It's not hard.
Who is...
I would throw Bon Jovi out there. Hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
Ladies did love Bon Jovi.
Mm-hmm. Who was that one guy in Machine Gun Kelly?
Machine Gun Kelly?
Mm-hmm. Machine Gun Kelly.
Apparently. Is he a rock star?
Yeah.
I thought we were talking about rock and roll. Like specifically rock.
Like just straight up rock and roll.
Well, he did do that punk album recently. Hmm. He tried to at least.
I didn't hear that.
I don't know.
It's pretty good. He hits all the right notes on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He hits all the right notes. He didn't hook up once.
I mean, like when you're going for a specific genre like that, and, you know, you got the tools to do it. I mean, just don't fuck it up. Stay within the rules of the genre, and, you know, because, you know, punk and emo, indie, they all have these rules to them loose rules, but to make it sound guidelines. Like that genre, there's guidelines to it.
Sure.
And you know, punk is one of those where it's just like, yeah, it's rebellious and stuff like that, but it's like, you know, like we talked about earlier, it's like a lot of punk, which is like repeats,
yeah,
stuff like that. It has
the repetitiveness, the sound quality.
Yeah, so stay within the fucking guidelines that have been set before you. Use your tools and your talent and don't fuck up your punk album.
Yeah.
It's that simple, right?
Have a Coke and a smile. And shut the fuck up.
Have a Coke and a smile. Bang your model girlfriend or something. He's dating somebody super hot, too.
Who, Lenny Kravitz?
Well, no, he's still married to... Kelly. Yeah. Lenny Kravitz is still married to... what's her name from the Kravitz show?
What is her name?
Lisa Bonet.
Yeah.
Yeah, seen her run through that time. That playlist, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we talked about most of the songs. We didn't really mention ISIS that much, but
I will say this.
That I remember
was 6.5 minutes long. That's what I remember.
You remember that about that?
Yeah. It's actually 9.5.
Yeah, you had that upside down. Maybe your phone was upside down.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's the Truly that I'm drinking.
It's the Truly.
It's Truly being upside down.
But ISIS, I feel like they got a bad rap after the whole terrorist organization surfaced.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they did. Yeah, a lot of people were like, how dare you name your band this? And like, we've been naming this first for like 10 years before this was a thing.
And you know what? It was fucked up. ISIS wasn't even the first name for it. So it's Daesh.
For the terrorist cell?
Yeah, for the terrorist cell. So apparently their actual name is Daesh or something like that, you know, and Farsi or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the original name that they were talking about when Obama was naming them was ISIL, ISIL.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
And I think the marketing on that didn't stick, you know, because they're trying to create a boogeyman or whatever.
Right.
You know, so they were like, it doesn't roll off the tongue. It's like Obama. I think even Obama said in a meeting that he was like, it's like wind of change or winds of change. Which one rolls off the tongue better? So they went with ISIS, you know?
Yeah. And they completely fucked over that band that's been around since the late 80s.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Stupid fucking ISIS. ISIL, Daesh.
Well,
let me ask y'all a couple questions before I assume we sign off, because we've been on this for about a couple and a half hours.
Couple and a half.
How y'all feeling about this so far?
About the podcast?
Just
talking and... It's fun.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. And I think there's like an infinite amount of things to talk about.
It's true. Yeah.
You know, we can go any direction we want with it. And that's one of the reasons I didn't want to like pigeonhole us or anything. So
right,
we can talk about whatever we want.
Yeah. What do you think about you guys in the future? Maybe like having some more structure to it? Segments and stuff like that? Is that something that you guys would look, you know, towards in the future, or do you guys like this loosey goosey, we talk whatever we want format?
We have a list of a lot of different segment ideas, some of which we've brought up before, and but we do want it to have some randomness to the structure because the playlists themselves are so random.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I like the format. I like the idea of putting you guys putting together the playlists and
yeah,
a lot of potential here.
We will probably eventually, you know, introduce some more structure to it, but we're just kind of getting the hang of it right now.
Dipping your toe in a pool.
Yeah. I mean, I want it to be like controlled chaos,
mm-hmm.
not completely structured because I hate that shit.
Yeah.
Like,
and, you know, honestly, probably better off not have like slowly implementing those things instead of trying to just
do it
like,
from the start.
Do it from the start and then fucking hating that shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think it'll organically come together over time. You know, so one of the ideas I wanted to flesh out was having a randomizer wheel. So like all the different segment ideas that we have will be on this, like this wheel that you don't really spin. It'll be on the website, right? You click, mm-hmm. you click to spin.
Mm-hmm.
So you can basically like play it like a game at home when you're having a party for like drinking games or whatever, like spin the wheel, land on a topic, discuss amongst yourselves.
Okay. Yeah.
Stuff like that. Or we could use that during the show to be like, we don't know what the fuck we want to talk about this week. Let's hit the wheel.
And then you guys could have one of these buttons in here.
Yeah.
Randomizer wheel.
Yeah. We had talked about setting up some things like that, like bands that don't exist or, you know,
yeah,
have a segment title ready to just play at the touch of a button.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, the sky's the limit, baby. This is your thing. Do what you do. Fuck the haters.
Right.
I'm sure both of you guys have a lot of haters out there.
So
mm-hmm. We will.
You don't get to be the handsome. That'll accumulate your fair share of haters.
You ain't hating. You ain't paying attention.
Mm-hmm. You ain't hating. You ain't baiting.
You ain't baiting. Go away hating.
Go away hating. So you guys got like a call off, like a sign off call?
Not yet. Do you have a suggestion?
What is the technical name?
The full name is the Omnium Gatherer Music.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can just say that.
Just say Omnium Gatherer Music.
No, so we
Yeah, we were gonna go with OGM, but there's already like a few different OGM podcasts.
Yeah, me though.
Or letters old G.
G right next to each other.
It's old combination.
Yeah. Old G and me.
Well, this seems like, you know, it's a good time for you guys to figure it out at the very beginning.
At the very beginning.
Perhaps we had better start from the beginning.
Perhaps we can start.
Omnium Gatherer of Music.
Signing off. Thanks for listening, everybody. Tune in again next time. And
we'll talk about it. Be well. Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. I had a lot of fun.
Thanks, Johnny.